Today, in a Brooklyn courtroom, a federal judge sentenced Joaquin Guzman to life in prison plus 30 years. You know him better as El Chapo, the former head of the Mexican Sinaloa drug cartel. El Chapo was found guilty of drug trafficking and money laundering, not to mention multiple murder conspiracies. Now he's off to a supermax prison, likely in Colorado. U.S. officials say the Sinaloa cartel was once the largest trafficker of cocaine, heroin, and marijuana into the American market. Deborah Bonello has reported extensively on cartel violence across Latin America from her base in Mexico City. She says the Sinaloa cartel remains a major player even without El Chapo.
In a way, I think as long as he had been in prison in Mexico, he was always able to exercise his power from behind bars. And of course, a lot of the time that he was in Mexico, he spent on the lam and still managed to be one of the determining factors within the Sinaloa cartel. His extradition was a sign to the organized crime landscape in Mexico that he wasn't coming back. And that changed everything. So what you saw was this kind of internal struggle for power. So you had Ismael El Mayo Zambada, who is pretty much the last remaining old school capo now in Mexico and is the co-founder of the Sinaloa cartel along with Chapo. He continues to sit on the throne, but he's overseeing these different factions, one of which is managed by two of El Chapo's sons, the other by his brother. But despite those power struggles, the Sinaloa cartel carries on regardless, you know.
Yeah, so how has that struggle for power among the cartels redrawn the cartel map of Mexico? Like, where are the main cartels located now and who holds the power?
So we have the Sinaloa cartel still dominates the northwest of the country. States like Chihuahua, Sonora, Sinaloa, of course, are still controlled largely by them. And then when you come sort of further south, that's where you have the other major criminal organizations still wielding significant power in Mexico, which is the Jalisco New Generation cartel. And that cartel has gained power tremendously in the last decade, and any weakness or faltering that we've seen on the Sinaloa side has been to their advantage. But you also have a lot of other smaller criminal cells and organizations to the east towards the border in Tamaulipas. You have the Gulf cartel still operating, and there are plenty of diverse criminal cells that work and align themselves with these criminal organizations to provide whatever services it is that they need.
It sounds like El Chapo's extradition to the U.S. didn't really have any chilling effect on the cartels.
No, I mean, if you look at Mexico's homicide levels now, they are higher than they've ever been since records began. And a lot of that is to do with, yes, this rivalry between Jalisco New Generation and the Sinaloa cartel, but also the following of the kingpin strategy by the Mexican government, funded by the United States government, which takes out capos and kingpins. And what that does is create power vacuums, which generate more violence as other ambitious capos try to take their place.
You published essentially an opinion piece before his sentencing today, and you wrote, "I suggest U.S. authorities give El Chapo a slap on the wrist and think about letting him out for good behavior." Explain your reasoning, because based on everything we know about this man, most people are going to find your idea incomprehensible.
That column was slightly tongue-in-cheek, but the point that I'm making is that Chapo comes from an old generation of drug traffickers. I think it's really important to point out the image that he has in the American media and around the world as sitting on top of the throne of Mexico's international drug trafficking trade is inaccurate. You know, the Sinaloa cartel has historically had a horizontal hierarchy, largely based on the fact that a lot of the chiefs could be taken out at any time and compromise the running of the cartel. And I think organized crime saw a fundamental shift with the arrival of other criminal organizations after 2000, namely Las Zetas, who really upped the ante in terms of the use of violence as a form of terror and control. And they also detonated what was effectively an arms race amongst organized crime in Mexico. You know, they were using the kind of weapons that you hadn't seen before. They were throwing decapitated heads onto the floors of discos. They attacked the civilian population, again, in a way that you really hadn't seen before. So other criminal organizations, including that of the Sinaloa cartel, had no choice but to match that kind of weaponry and the use of that kind of violence to stay in the game. Now that you see El Chapo out of the game, you know, and the last sort of old school capo, El Mayo, still overseeing the Sinaloa cartel, but as far as I'm aware, not in great health, you have to ask yourself, left in the hands of these new, more millennial narcos, such as El Chapo's sons and El Mencho with the Jalisco New Generation, you have to wonder, where is that level of violence going to go? Because we're already seeing Mexican homicides at an all-time high. They have not gone down significantly since the middle of Enrique Peña Nieto's administration before AMLO. And that is not a good sign for where things are going in terms of security in Mexico and organized crime.
Deb Bonello has reported extensively on cartel violence in Mexico and Latin America. She's been speaking with us from Mexico City. Deborah, thanks very much.
Thank you, Marco. Good talking to you.